Your heart races, your defenses rise. Someone just offered feedback about your work, your parenting, or your relationship skills, and suddenly you're fighting an internal battle between wanting to improve and wanting to protect your self-image. This universal reaction explains why, despite 825 million work hours spent annually on performance reviews, most feedback falls on defensive ears. Douglas Stone and Sheila Heen flipped the traditional script by focusing not on giving better feedback, but on receiving it more effectively. Their revolutionary approach has become a favorite among leaders at organizations like Google and the Gates Foundation because they recognize a fundamental truth. The real leverage in feedback isn't in the giving, it's in the receiving. When we learn to welcome feedback, even when it stings, we transform criticism from something we endure into fuel for growth and deeper connections. When receiving feedback, our reactions often stem from emotional triggers rather than content. Truth triggers occur when we fixate on disproving feedback we believe is wrong, missing potential insights. Relationship triggers shift focus to the messenger instead of the message. Identity triggers are most destabilizing, threatening our self-image when feedback challenges how competent or caring we believe ourselves to be. Consider Kip, who prided himself on unbiased hiring. When colleague Nancy suggested he treated non-traditional candidates differently, he immediately dismissed her, a classic truth trigger. Only through clarifying questions did he discover his animated interviewing style gave these candidates less space to present themselves. His blind spot existed not because the feedback was wrong, but because he couldn't see Nancy's perspective. Growth begins with recognizing which triggers activate when we receive feedback, allowing us to move beyond defensiveness to engage with valuable insights. Feedback serves three distinct purposes. Appreciation says, I see you and you matter, fulfilling our need for recognition. Without it, relationships develop mutual appreciation deficit disorder where both parties feel undervalued. Coaching helps you improve, assuming growth is possible and providing guidance. Evaluation tells you where you stand against expectations, providing assessment that aligns expectations and informs decisions. Problems occur when feedback doesn't match what's needed. Consider Donald, a law firm partner who misses the mark with three employees. His assistant wants appreciation for her dedication but gets coaching on time management. A first-year lawyer seeks coaching but receives evaluation. And a senior associate needs clear evaluation about partnership prospects but gets vague appreciation. Despite good intentions, everyone leaves frustrated. All coaching contains implicit evaluation. When someone suggests how to improve your presentation, they're implying your current skills are lacking. This explains why identical baseball coaching from a father receives opposite reactions from twin daughters. One hears helpful advice while the other hears criticism. To avoid misalignments, be explicit about feedback's purpose. When receiving feedback, clarify what you need. I appreciate your coaching, but first I need to know if I'm doing all right overall. When receiving feedback, our first instinct is to judge its validity. Holly, a public defender, dismisses her supervisor's advice about getting too enmeshed with clients because she believes caring deeply is essential to her work. This wrong-spotting tendency halts learning before it begins. The problem lies in how feedback arrives. Vague, generic labels like be more proactive or maintain professional distance that contain little actual content. When Holly's supervisor said she was too enmeshed, she assumed he meant care less, when he actually meant stop giving clients money and establish clearer boundaries to maintain credibility. Labels merely indicate topics, they aren't the actual feedback. Misunderstandings occur because givers and receivers interpret labels differently. Givers see a detailed mental movie of the behavior they're describing, while receivers hear only vague words. To understand feedback better, resist filling in your own meaning. Be more affectionate could mean anything from holding hands in public to saying, I love you more often. Instead of dismissing feedback as wrong, understand why perspectives differ. The shift moves from "that's wrong" to "tell me more. Let's figure out why we see this differently." We observe different data because of our varied roles, positions, and sensitivities. Even when looking at identical situations, interpretations diverge. When Janie complains about house cleaning, both see the same messy house but interpret it differently. Janie sees chaos, while Ripley sees evidence of a vibrant family life. We all have blind spots, things obvious to others but invisible to us. Our leaky face, expressions visible to everyone except ourselves, leaky tone, voice conveying meaning we don't hear, and leaky patterns, recurring behaviors, create a fundamental disconnect between how others perceive us versus how we see ourselves. While humans evolved exceptional ability to read others' facial expressions, we remain blind to our own. Our superior temporal sulcus, the brain region processing vocal emotion, actually turns off when we speak, explaining why feedback about our tone often surprises us. Even major behavioral patterns can remain invisible to us while being obvious to others, like Bennett, who discovers his family sees him as always on his cell phone despite his efforts to minimize screen time. Three dynamics widen this perception gap: emotional math, we discount emotions others count double; situation versus character attribution, we blame circumstances while others blame our character; and impact versus intent, we judge ourselves by intentions while others judge by impacts. When late for a call, we explain we were juggling tasks while others conclude we're scatterbrained. These blind spot amplifiers create an unrealistically positive self-image. While 37% of Americans report being workplace bullying victims, fewer than 1% identify as bullies, suggesting many bullies are unaware of their impact. Simply trying harder to see ourselves clearly doesn't work. Instead, we need others to serve as honest mirrors. Ask specifically, "What do you see me doing or failing to do that is getting in my own way?" Our ability to handle feedback depends on how we hold our identity. Some develop brittle identities that shatter under criticism, while others build robust ones that embrace feedback. We become more resilient by embracing complexity over simple labels and adopting a growth mindset. Simple identity statements like "I'm competent" create all-or-nothing dynamics where criticism feels like complete invalidation. A more nuanced self-story acknowledges both strengths and shortcomings, allowing you to learn without devastation. Stanford professor Carol Dweck found that children respond differently to challenges based on their mindset. Those with fixed mindsets see difficult puzzles as judgments on their abilities, while growth mindset children view them as opportunities to improve, working in a learning room rather than a testing room. After receiving negative feedback, give yourself a second score based on how you respond. While the initial evaluation may not be fully in your control, your reaction is, and long term, this second score often matters more. Transforming feedback from threat to opportunity unlocks your capacity for continuous growth and deeper connection.